Hello, welcome to this bonus episode of ESC 101. I imagine you've just finished watching the Eurovision Song Contest 2024, and no doubt there's a lot of different emotions being experienced by a lot of people. I wanted to take a moment and chat about what happened at this year's Eurovision Song Contest. This is an informal episode. There's not going to be any real structure, no theme music, just me giving my two cents on this year's contest. I'm also not going to be advertising this on social media, but you are free to share and discuss as you wish. All I ask is that you keep it civil and polite. There are points which you may disagree with, and you have the right to disagree. I'm just a Eurovision fan. I'm not all-knowing, and I don't have the solutions to the problems that the EBU are facing or engaging in, but I want to give my perspective and hopefully some clarity. So where do I begin? I'll start by thanking you for not only listening to this episode, but also the episodes covering my thoughts on the studio track versions of all 37 competing songs. My 2024 episodes are some of my most popular episodes, which I wasn't fully expecting, considering how new I am to the podcasting platform. I am grateful for your support in listening to my opinions, and whether you agreed or disagreed, I hope you'll stick around to listen to my thoughts on the entries in the upcoming episodes, as well as future Eurovision history episodes. I have been a fan of the Eurovision Song Contest since 2017. I often champion the contest as this amazing community of music lovers who can at least partially put down their borders and prejudice and join together in the celebration of music and culture. I know it's a very idealistic view of the contest, which has never really existed in the first place, but I'd like to think that the founders of the contest back in 1956 wanted to create something that would bring people together to celebrate the common roots that music has in all of us. This year's contest in particular did not reflect that, in my view, and I feel ashamed at some of the things I saw both online and in the contest itself. I know that social media in general is toxic. When people have the anonymity of their profiles, the power to simply spew unfiltered hate and abuse towards one another is tempting for many. People can say whatever they want and face no real-world consequences because they'll be extremely difficult to track down. From every corner of the fandom, I truly saw vile statements and expressions not just towards the artists, but to fellow fans, and I know that that's not the true essence of the Eurovision community, but it's hard to ignore. I've seen it done to people I know, people I respect, and it's painful to see. There are three main issues that I want to address, and I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to address them, but I'm going to try my best to do it anyway. The first is Israel's participation in this year's contest. I know that I have people from Israel who listen to my podcast, and I hope that whoever listens to my podcast are people of peace, but I also want to be honest with my feelings about Israel's participation. I felt tense during not only the week of Eurovision, but the lead up to it as well. I am very thankful that the stage was kept safe for the artists, and I'm very thankful to Eurovision staff and volunteers and police force and whoever else worked to make the contest safe. And I'm going to be honest, I did not feel comfortable with how Israel managed their entry for this year. Now, I want to make it perfectly clear that I'm not going to be proclaiming my stance on the Hamas-IDF conflict, mostly because I don't know where I stand on the conflict. There's a lot of back history, and I just can't just blindingly pick a side. The only thing I know that I'm certain of is that I absolutely reject all forms of violence, no matter who is committing it. This conflict goes well beyond October 7th, it goes well beyond the 1940s, and I am not in a position to give a thought-out stance on the issue. I refuse to blindly follow crowds of people regardless of which side of the argument they stand for. And I will always respect the rights of others who peacefully protest, and I respect the decisions of those who decided not to discuss Israel's entry at this year's contest. They have the right to do so, and I will respect their decision. I decided to cover the Israeli entry because I felt it was not right to leave out an entry that was approved by the EBU to compete, regardless of how I felt about the entry as a fan. As a host of a Eurovision history podcast, it is not my job to write the history book to fit my own narrative. I am here to tell the story of the Eurovision Song Contest and to offer my opinion in an appropriate way. I review the entry like any other country, and I gave it an honest review based on the same criteria that I used to judge the other entries. And I will be reviewing all 37 entries in the next two episodes using the same level of honesty. There are fans that believe the EBU should have banned Israel from competing in this year's contest due to a number of incidents which went against the spirit of the contest. Many fans called upon both their national broadcasters and the EBU in general to act, but the EBU ultimately decided to allow Israel to compete. These incidents were rooted in the national selection program and the creation of the song itself, not to mention the conflict that the IDF or the Israeli Defense Force is currently engaged in with Gaza and more specifically Hamas. Israel used the show Hakokav Haba to select the artist Eden Golan. During the audition shows, there were segments which supported the IDF and one of the contestants performed in military fatigues. This particular choice that the broadcaster made is, in my opinion, contrary to the non-political nature of the contest, at least the non-political nature that it claims. I was uncomfortable with the inclusion of military forces in a Eurovision selection program. I felt that that should have been left out, and that the choice resulted in several media groups and fans limiting or outright refusing to cover Israel at the contest, which I don't blame them for. Regardless of how I felt, Israel had selected its artist, and songs were submitted to an internal committee at the broadcaster. The creation of the song provided further points of controversy. Originally titled October Rain, the song had clear references to the conflict, if the title wasn't already a dead giveaway. The song was rejected by the EBU, and the broadcaster initially refused to change the lyrics. The broadcaster eventually gave in to the EBU's demands and made two attempts to change the lyrics of the song. The broadcaster also submitted a second song called Dance Forever, which was also rejected. The EBU approved the renamed entry Hurricane on March 7th. The song's melody and musical composition is identical to October Rain, with only small adjustments to the lyrics to change the meaning from referencing the conflict to telling the story of a woman experiencing a personal crisis. Very few lyrics were changed, and seeing that song being performed on the stage made me uncomfortable. The song felt tainted, because I knew that the original was rejected by the EBU, and the adjustments were so small that the song could still be interpreted as political in nature. Regardless of how I feel about the song, I will still review it in the upcoming grand final episode and treat it equally amongst the other acts. Again, it's not my job to write the history book, only to share and maintain its accuracy to the best of my ability. The second issue that I'd like to mention is the disqualification of the Netherlands. There has never been a country that has been disqualified during the competition, and I hope that this one is the last. There have been countries which were removed from the contest shortly before it took place, and others, like France in 1974, withdrew from the contest days before it was to take place, but an active disqualification has never occurred until now. There is an incident involving the Dutch representative and a female employee of the production team who filed a complaint against the artist to the Swedish police authority. I want to make it clear that there is a justice system in Sweden and that anyone accused of crime is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I will not speculate as to the nature of the incident because we simply don't know all the facts. And the police report is being put together, being brought to a prosecutor, and if crimes have been committed, if the police felt the crimes have been committed, then they will take appropriate steps and they will render the claims and the judgments as necessary. There have been large amounts of speculation online ranging from the artist just made a simple gesture to the artist completely assaulted this employee, and speculating about the incident is not only irresponsible, it's dangerous. Now, I'll admit, I speculated quietly amongst my own thoughts, and I looked through the comments that were being mentioned by a lot of people. The production team employee is presumably a paid worker and not a volunteer, someone who I hope has had years of experience in the industry, and I know that most people with good integrity is not going to make an accusation without any cause or evidence, and I'm hoping that the accusation is not baseless. Regardless of the artist's innocence or guilt in this incident, the EBU decided to take a firm stance on their zero tolerance policy towards abuse of its staff members and presumably against others involved in the contest. However, despite following this zero tolerance policy, I feel that there's also inconsistency in the EBU's actions regarding their policy of abuse, as Ireland's entrant and delegation were harassed, and they took this incident to the EBU, with the EBU seeming to take no official action on the incident. There were complaints lodged with the EBU over members of various Israeli fan clubs, two of which were officially associated with the EBU, harassing the Irish delegation at Euroclub. And there were complaints lodged by the Irish artists themselves, who claimed that Khan had, quote, incited violence against me twice, three times. We brought it up to the EBU. They said they'd follow up. They waited until the last minute. We still haven't got a statement back. Again, I do not know the details of the incident, but I am disappointed in anyone that engages in harassment of any kind, and those who engage in such behavior should be ashamed of themselves and have the appropriate privileges revoked. In terms of the incident of the Dutch artist, I personally believe disqualification should only be warranted for serious breaches of misconduct involving physical or verbal abuse towards another individual, and that there is actual physical evidence being made available on the scene. Again, I do not know the circumstances of the incident, and I'll remind the Dutch broadcaster that they too do not know the circumstances of the incident. The broadcaster released a statement in support of their artist and that they believe the penalty of disqualification was disproportionate and shocking. But please keep in mind that this is the Dutch broadcaster's statement of support for the Dutch artist, and there needs to be an acknowledgement of potential bias in their review of the situation. Avro Tros is not the Swedish police force, and it's up to the police force to determine what happened. I would like to believe that the EBU would not just disqualify artists for no good reason, but their lack of communication and their lack of transparency makes me question their ability to make rational decisions. Unless there was clear proof of a physical or verbal altercation between the two, I don't believe it would have been appropriate to disqualify the artist. If the artist ended up being guilty of assault after the fact, then the EBU can retroactively fine or punish the Netherlands by taking away points, issuing financial penalties, removing their ability to participate in the future, or other punishments appropriate to the crime committed. But to disqualify an artist over an incident without clear indications of evidence of physical or verbal harassment is, in my opinion, too harsh. But because I don't know the facts and the report hasn't been made public, we don't really know what happened. There could have been a physical altercation, there might not have been, but at this point, it's just speculation. Only the police force will know what have happened between talking with the artist and the employee and other witnesses and gathering any sort of evidence that they have to bring to a prosecutor, which will determine whether there needs to be charges filed. All I can do is speculate in hypotheticals, and without clear evidence and clear communication from either the police force or the EBU, that's all about we can do at this point. I will also say that I am extremely disappointed in Avro Tros's behavior towards the incident, specifically in their refusal to participate in the jury result in the grand final. The spokesperson, Nikki De Jager, refused to give the jury points of the Netherlands due to the disqualification, and the broadcaster opted not to replace her with a different spokesperson. This is not only an extremely juvenile response to the situation, in my opinion, it's downright disrespectful to the contest as a whole. Of course, the Dutch broadcaster has every right to be angry with the EBU and disagree with their ruling, but by refusing to participate in the voting segment, they are essentially throwing a temper tantrum because things did not go their way, instead of acting like a responsible adult and doing what they needed to do. If they want to protest or even withdraw from the 2025 contest, they are free to do so, and I fully expect the Netherlands to withdraw in 2025 because of this. But I don't respect a broadcaster who acts in a juvenile manner and simply abandons their responsibilities just because they don't agree with the EBU's decision. Let me be clear, I don't agree with the EBU's decision either. Personally, I would have chosen to protest after the contest, and I would have chosen to push through the voting procedure. It just makes the broadcaster feel pity, and it's like, oh, we're not participating because you disqualified our artist. It's, no, there's literally an active investigation, and until something's being proven, the EBU decided to err on the side of caution and disqualify the artist. I don't agree with that personally, but it's just what it is. The EBU did what they thought was right, and the Dutch broadcaster should have just given the straight 12 points, no pleasantries, just 12 points go to blank, and just move on. I think that that's the best thing that they could have done. But again, I'm not Avro Tros. I didn't make the decision, but I just disagree with what they did. The third major issue that I want to discuss was the flag policy implemented for this year's contest. In previous years, flags had to be regulated due to their size and potential for branding and messaging. In 2016, the flag policy allowed the flags of the participating countries and countries who are members of the United Nations, as well as the rainbow flag and the European Union flag, as long as they weren't used to intentionally make political statements. Flags that were banned included any local, regional, or provincial flags, or those who contained statements or images which were political or religious in nature. In 2024, the flag policy was restricted to the 37 competing countries and the rainbow flag. Putting aside the fact that the flag of Europe was banned, yes, the EU flag is the same flag used by the Council of Europe as a symbol for the whole of Europe. It was adopted in 1955, way before the EBU was officially formed. The EBU's flag policy is way too strict. This point was driven by the Swiss artist who had to sneak in a non-binary flag while fans had their own non-binary flags taken away. The Swiss artist is non-binary and openly displayed the flag both in the flag parade and in the green room during the voting sequence. Banning the flag of the European Union is completely ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, Sweden's literally in the EU, and lots of people wave EU flags, yes, for political reasons, but also for non-political reasons. And as well, the Dutch entry had literally the EU flag on their costumes and in the screen and in the lighting, like it was everywhere. And to not allow the European Union flag, whoever came up with that decision needs to be fired immediately. That's just stupid. I believe the flag policy needs to be expanded dramatically, and if I had the deciding power, I would include the following flags. All the 193 UN member countries, Vatican City, because Vatican City is not a member of the United Nations, but is part of the European Broadcasting Union. Constituent country flags like those for Wales or the Faroe Islands. Territorial flags like those for Gibraltar or Bermuda. A specified list of LGBTQ plus flags, including the rainbow flag, transgender flag, non-binary flag, the Progress Pride flag, and any others, as well as the flag of Europe. Of course, discussions can be held to include other specific flags if necessary, but as it stands, the current EBU restrictions on flags are way too strict. This brings me to, hopefully, the close of a more negative experience for this year's Eurovision Song Contest, but there is one small point that I do want to make. The EBU, and specifically those in charge like Executive Supervisor Martin Østerdahl and the Director General of the EBU, Noel Curran, needs to be investigated, and changes need to be made throughout the EBU, especially involving transparency and procedures for handling complaints and incidents. I thought the musical number praising Martin Østerdahl was done in poor taste. Obviously, they couldn't have predicted what happened, but going ahead with that number was really tone deaf. And had I been in the position to make production decisions, I would have scrapped that musical number and replaced it with something else. Martin, I think, got the most boos that night, and rightfully so. Between the jury debacle of 2022, the general corporatization of the contest, and this year's incidents, the EBU as a whole needs to reevaluate its judgments, not just Martin himself, but the entire EBU leadership. As the winner of this year's contest said, maybe Eurovision needs fixing, and I fully agree with that sentiment. Now, rather than leaving you with all that doom and gloom, I also want to take time to celebrate some of the accomplishments and records made in this year's contest. Of course, congratulations to the winner of this year's contest, Switzerland. This is their third win, and Nemo joins Lys Asia and Céline Dion in being the Swiss winners of the contest, which is a pretty prestigious group to be a part of. A huge congratulations to Croatia in achieving their highest placement to date, beating their fourth place in 1999 with a second place finish in the final and winning the semifinal. This is a fantastic result, and I hope that Croatia comes back with a winning entry in 2025. Ukraine's third place is a wonderful placement, especially coming from position number two, which is known as the death spot. Ukraine did an amazing job, and I loved the performance. Ireland's sixth place finish in the grand final is also a huge accomplishment. Going from non-qualification to sixth place is such a huge change. They previously qualified in 2018, and Ireland wasn't this high in the rankings since their entry in 2000, which also placed sixth. So well done to the Irish team. Please do not send generic pop nonsense ever again. Germany is also no longer at the bottom of the scoreboard. Yay, managing to finish on the left-hand side of the scoreboard with 12th place, which I really wasn't expecting. Fantastic job, Germany, but like Ireland, please stop sending generic pop nonsense and send something a bit more impactful for next year. Luxembourg, welcome back to the Eurovision family, and congratulations on making it not only to the grand final, but also to the left-hand side of the scoreboard. When you left us in 1993, you came 20th, and were relegated in 1994, which was a big shame, and fans are thrilled to have you back in the contest, and we look forward to seeing you in 2025. To Latvia and Georgia, congratulations on breaking your 8-year non-qualification streak. It was fantastic to have the Baltic Sisters together in the grand final, which hasn't happened in 9 years. And on a final note, I want to wish Gignola Cinquetti a happy 60th anniversary of your winning entry, a happy 50th anniversary to ABBA, 40th anniversary to the Herreys, 30th anniversary to Paul Harrington and Charlie Mageddon, 20th anniversary to Ruslana, and a happy 10th anniversary to Conchita Wurst. Those are my basic thoughts on this year's contest, and I hope that you'll find the space to process your own emotions, both positive and more tense. And I hope to see you this coming Friday for part 4 of our 2024 Eurovision Song Contest coverage, looking at the acts which did not qualify to the grand final. Until then, be kind to one another, and I'll see you next time. This has been ESC 101.